Coming to you from the Underground Studio, this is the Sipping Social Podcast. My name is Mike Caro. I'm here with my boy and certified bourbon steward, Garrett Turnquist.
Yo.
We've also got our stellar producer on the mic, Johnny. Say what up.
What up?
We're here to dive into all aspects of the restaurant industry. We truly love what we do and love talking about it. We're going to pour, sample, and review anything you need to know about. Pour yourself a cocktail and join us on this journey.
Let's go.
Sounded so good in the headphones. I love that song. Welcome to a special segment of the Sipping Social Podcast. We have some really fun guests joining us right now. We're sitting on the second floor of Maize & Mash, obviously a beautiful restaurant in the group that we get to work for. We got Johnny, our producer, on the mic. We got Garrett, the bourbon steward, on the mic. And then we also have our special guests with us, Brian, the master distiller and partner for Hard Truth, distilling out of Indiana. Thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We also have Dominic, who is the sales manager for Illinois for Hard Truth Distilling as well. How you doing today, brother?
Doing great, man.
Cool. And then a last second addition, not by her own wanting or volition, Jen, the GM of Maize & Mash, is also on the mic. How you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Nice. So we've turned this into, a badass roundtable of titans of the industry, which is cool. We are here to talk about Hard Truth. In my personal experience, I've had really only the sweet mash rye, which I love. Let's have a cheers of the podcast. Brian chose for us to drink the sweet mash bourbon, and he's going to tell us all about it after we try some.
Cheers.
Let's go. Cheers.
Cheers. Let's have some fun. Cheers, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Delicious.
That's pretty tasty.
Yeah, so this is our flagship of our sweet mash bourbon lineup. So we just released three sweet mash bourbons to the world. And this one's the one that just carries the title Sweet Mash Bourbon. Pretty straight down the middle mash bill, 73% corn, 19 rye, and 9 malted barley. And yes, I'm looking at a cheat sheet as I'm saying that.
Nobody's judging you, man.
Because we've got so many mash bills. But this is really one, the mash bill that shined really nicely at a lower proof. So as y'all are in the industry of serving fine drinks to people, you know that bartenders and cocktail creators, bottle cost means something, and proof means something. So while we love our, you know, full proof whiskeys and our cask strength whiskeys, we wanted to choose one of the mash bills that really shine nicely between 90 and 95 proof. So this one is bottled at 90 proof, and it's a really nice price point on the shelf as well.
Well, and it just came out.
Like this is
brand new, like a week or two old in Illinois. We might be the first people in our restaurant group to try it.
Nice.
We got it on a cocktail of a month for all of our restaurants coming up next tomorrow or the day after.
Yeah, Friday.
Depending on when John, maybe a week ago, depending on when this gets released.
Easy, Garrett, easy.
when Dominic showed me the bourbon, I mean, we talked about using this as a cocktail a month, you know, a couple of weeks before, a couple months before, but as soon as I tried it, I was like, yeah, we can make a cocktail with this. I was worried. When he said, let's make it a cocktail of the month, I was like, let's try it first. Because if it's trash, then I'm going to need to mix with strawberries and cucumbers and like blend, get all of it out of there. But like, let's try it first. And then we were able to make a cocktail that was a little bit boost forward, but also a little bit sweet too for the month of March. So kudos to you for making this whiskey for exactly what you're talking about, but also something that's easy to cocktail with and easy to drink by itself.
Yeah, thank you very much. You know, one of the things about our process as a sweet mash distillery and the way we're able to tune our still is we seem to get a lot of the oils over in distillation. So even at a lower proof, you still got a nice viscosity, oiliness to the whiskey, which clings on the palate, brings those sweet notes forward. It doesn't taste like a thin whiskey at 90 proof,
no,
which is what I really wanted.
I think it's very prevalent.
Brian, why did you go with the 19% rye? Because I love it. I love how you put the 19% rye, which really gives it those flavors of the sweet mash and the high road. Why did you decide to go with that number?
Look at Dom coming strong with a question.
The question
right out of the game.
Hey, he's gonna turn my microphone off right now.
I talked to Garrett last night, and I was like, hey, what do you want to ask? And he was like, I don't know. We're just gonna ask non-conventional questions. I was like, All right. Well, I better come with something at least.
We got a new question master.
Question master in the house. Ding ding.
That's a great question, Dominic. It really is. But you know, this mash bill, if you look at kind of some classic bourbon mash bills, this one's pretty right down the middle. I mean, really, this one's not going to veer too far into like the high rye category. It's not a wheater. It's not a four grain. It's not super high on the corn. I wanted to have one mash bill because we like to kind of push and pull things. We don't try to be disruptors, but we like to push and pull things in different directions. And this one's a little bit more down the middle. But what we found with our rye whiskeys is we coax a lot of sweet flavors out of our ryes. So whereas a lot of rye whiskeys that are on the market are just kind of spicy and savory are the two main notes, we get this real intense, like, juicy fruit note that comes out from our rye. So that paired with the corn, a little bit of malted barley in there, it's really nice. And again, you don't know what you've got until you've got it, right? So
they made a song about that.
Yeah, a lot of decisions made along the way.
No, too soon.
Too soon.
All right.
I haven't had enough whiskey for that. I'm sorry. My bad.
But you know, with this one, Chris and I will go into the lab and we'll take these whiskeys and we'll go one proof point down from cask strength all the way to 90. And inevitably, like our High Road Rye is bottled at 93 proof. That's not because a marketing person told us that. That's where that whiskey shined. So with this one, really at 90 proof, this whiskey was tremendous. It's great at cask strength too, but 90 is a great proof point for this.
How much influence does that marketing team have on you guys in production, or what do you guys decide to do for the next thing?
0.0.
I love it.
No, I love our marketing folks, and we've actually got a really strong team, and they're starting to come to the fore now. But you know, at the concept of the project and the business, you know, my partners are entrepreneurs, so really this was let's make the best whiskey that we can make, and then we'll figure it out from there.
So a lot of distilleries say that all the time, right? But like, we don't need like shit on specific brands, but like, what percentage of like major distilleries' marketing team has an effect on what they're putting out?
Well, I mean, marketing is super important, and I jokingly said 0.0, but at this point, you know, the marketing and the sales arm, they've now got to do the heavy lifting. You know, we've got the whiskey in the barrels that are ready. We've got the beautiful 325 acres and the great hospitality arm. Now it's taking this whiskey to the world. So the efforts from the marketing team and the sales team and really that collaboration there is everything now.
That's awesome, man. I am really enjoying the aroma on this whiskey, and it really leads to the taste for the palate. And classic, good vanilla, to me, some butterscotch in there. But I wanted to ask you kind of about the inception of Hard Truth. I don't think a lot of our listeners, they might have seen, this bottle is pretty distinct. I think that they've seen it on back bars, but they might not know a lot of about it. Give us like a brief history of the company, if you don't mind, and how you came to work with it and kind of grow the brand.
Yeah, sure. So it's a fun story. You know, there's a lot of, for all your whiskey fans out there, there are a ton of brands on the shelf now. I mean, it's like what happened to craft beer, where all of a sudden you go to the liquor store and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to catch up?
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
It's
right?
Overwhelming. Yeah. So where we're different from a lot of those brands is we're an authentic distillery, right? We're people who, you know, one of us didn't come from Beam Suntory or from Maker's Mark or, you know, wherever. We are just some people in a place that were really interested in making great whiskey, assembled a great team, and kind of are living the dream now. So 2014, the laws changed in Indiana, allowing for, if you were a brewery, winery, or a DSP in good standing, you could co-locate an artisan craft distillery and get that permit. What that permit allows you to do is to distill spirits and sell directly to consumer up to 10,000 proof gallons, which is a lot. So it was to really kind of get this started in Indiana. And it was spearheaded by Ted Huber and Ed Clare down in the southeastern part of the state. So the partners that I work with, Ed, Jeff, Jim, and Tim, had a great beer brand in the state of Indiana, Quaffon Brewing Company, and some brew pubs, Big Woods Restaurant Group. And so they jumped through the hoops, got the permit, and we were off and running. That's when I met them. So I got the chance to take a run at the program. So from the start, you know, I was able to, you know, run the direction, the creative direction control of the liquid. So it's been an incredible ride. Then 2017, 2016, they bought some property. If you're, you know, listeners are familiar with Brown County, Indiana, it's about an hour south of Indianapolis, 30 minutes east of Bloomington, where Indiana University is. Beautiful part of the country. It doesn't look like anything else in Indiana. It's like hills and hollers. Some people describe it like the Dells. I've not been to the Dells, but it's kind of just surprising. All of a sudden you're there and you're like, oh my God, this is beautiful. So they bought 325 acres. We have a 300-seat restaurant. We have a tour center. We do distillery tours, inside the barrel tours, side-by-side ATV tours. We drive, you drink. We had to build a new lake to support our rack house fire suppression, and we do tiki boat tours with a pontoon boat on this lake. It's the creative minds behind the...
Why are we here right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I know.
I told you, you got to get down.
Yeah. We should be recording on a tiki boat.
Yeah. You really should.
Or on a side-by-side.
Side-by-side, we have
just
to.
Just like massive, like, we got these microphones that have like wind shields on them.
Yeah, they got wind shields.
You guys would be fine. Yeah.
It really is a magical place. There's a couple articles that have been written recently about the Disneyland of spirits.
Yeah, the adult version of Disneyland.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really my partner's vision. I'm a details guy. They're the ones that come up with those experiences. But it's an awesome place. So built this awesome distillery. I worked diligently to connect with some industry partners down in Kentucky. Met Shane and Pat from Wilderness Trail. They were great mentors of mine. They're the ones that introduced us to sweet mashing as a process, which totally changed our trajectory of what we were going to do. So now we're making, we've made whiskey since the end of 2018 on that system. And that's what's in this cool sweet mash bottle in front of you.
Sweet mash compared to sour mash, it's kind of like hard for me to like put the question that I want to ask you into words, I think, because it's kind of above my chemistry knowledge and like how that works. I've seen sour mash in a lot of bottles, Michter's, Bell Mead, but never sweet mash before your guys' product came through. Can you tell us a little bit about that process and the difference between sweet mash and sour mash?
Well, and like, why would you put it in the bottle?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Sour mashing, everyone's seen that for Jack Daniel's old-time sour mash.
Yeah.
The industry has romanticized that from a marketing perspective. Essentially, sour mashing, and also, there are a few different ways you can sour mash. Most distilleries are sour mashing by taking the spent grain or whatever's not whiskey that comes off the still, and instead of feeding it to cattle, they put 10% of it back into the next fermentation. But they've woven this story of these like a sourdough starter, like a mother starter, right? There is nothing alive in that product that comes off the still. It's been heated above 220 degrees. There are some cool nutrients in it. It's very acidic. So the function of it really was born of, you add it to the next fermentation, lowers the pH, protects that fermentation from bacteria, promotes yeast growth, inhibits bacterial growth. So in a lot of the old distilleries, crusty piping, old cypress fermenters, it was almost impossible to really wrangle bacterial. You get a bacterial, if you know anyone in the beer business, if you get a contamination or infection, it's a nightmare, right? So they
and it goes with like personal experience too.
Yeah.
Like I don't want any of those things in my body.
No.
Yeah.
You get the Loterman out. Yeah. So that's what the sour mashing process really was created for. In my opinion, and other people's opinions, when you do the sour mash process, it does create some flavor consistency from batch to batch, but it does so by muting some of the real bright flavors that you get on the distillation. So in the most simplest term, sweet mashing is fresh water, fresh grain, fresh yeast, every single mash in. That's really, it's, and the only way that we can do that without being at risk of bacterial contamination or inconsistency is by tight SOPs and having the system built to be able to clean steam pasteurize through the entire system. So we were lucky to have figured this out before We built our system.
Nice.
Worked very closely with Shane and Pat at Wilderness Trail, which also they own a yeast company, Firm Solutions. And they helped us to kind of design our system. Then we took, you know, that base of knowledge and did our own thing. But from my perspective, the only reason why I care about it, because it's kind of, it can be a cool marketing story, but everything for me is palate driven, right? So the first time I tasted a 2-year-old sweet mash whiskey, rye whiskey from Wilderness Trail that hadn't been released yet, it just almost blew my mind completely. I couldn't understand how complex it was and how subtle, like, you know, it was soft, it was complex, it was so interesting, and it was so different from other rye whiskeys I'd ever tasted. So that really connected with me, my sensibilities.
I would go with the same thing about your sweet mash rye. Like, the very first time I tried you guys, I was like, this is how old? And this is this good? How is this possible?
Yeah, so, I would say that the key to that is not any kind of, because we use full, you know, standard 53-gallon barrels. We're not doing anything to fiddle with advanced aging. I think the big difference is the distillate that goes into the barrel tastes so damn good from the start. So then all we're really asking the barrel to do is to contribute some flavor to that whiskey. We're not asking it to subtract any negative flavors from the whiskey that can be created through the sour mashing process. Now, obviously, some of the greatest whiskeys I've ever tasted in my life have been sour mashed whiskeys. It's not a bad way to make whiskey. We're not really trying to do anything different for the sake of being different. It just connected with myself and my partners. We're all like, hey, this is what we're talking about. Let's make whiskey this way.
That's cool. I love it. It's unique, it's interesting, and clearly Garrett and I from day one have loved the sweet mash rye that came through social.
Thank you so much since
the first time we tried it. I think we got in on it in like the initial blitz.
Yeah.
And we couldn't believe that the bottle was only like, I don't want to say like 50 or 55 bucks our cost.
It was on sale.
And then we went to order it again, and it was like more than that. Yeah. And we're like, that makes more sense. It's really good. Like, it was just like one of those things that like clicked. It was like, why was this so cheap the first time we got it? And then we reordered, like,
I think I told you that you're getting it. Like, this is so good. You are now carrying this.
Like, it's
the first time that like I ever like put my foot down. I was like, we're all carrying this.
Yeah.
This is something that you need to know about, and then everyone needs to be able to try, because it was only 2 years old. And like, when was the last time you ever most rye in the world, right, is like sourced from MGP, and it generally isn't very good until 3-4 years old. And like, this is half that, and it's twice as good.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And you know,
we're only saying that because you're here.
Of course. Yeah, of course. I appreciate that as well.
But for real, though, it's so good. I mean, Dominic will tell you the same thing. Like, I gush over it. And Dominic's been really nice to like, give me like the remnants of whatever he's got to pitch to people as a thank you. And it's just so exciting to have it. And I refuse to finish the last sip until I have another one. So.
Well, it's fun. It's a fun whiskey. You know, I will be honest with you. We were... you know, unless you make whiskey in a place with the still that you have, making the decisions that you're making, choosing the barrels that you choose, you don't know what you're going to have. I mean, even if you can't replicate. I can't replicate MGP. I can't replicate.
Why would you want to?
And you wouldn't want to, right? But so a lot of this was a leap of faith, you know, in some respects. We knew we had good equipment, good process, good grains, great barrels. I mean, we knew we were going to make some really good whiskey. We just didn't know where the flavor was going to go. So I will tell you that when we first distilled the whiskey that's in that sweet mash rye, which is 94% rye, 6% malted barley, I did not need a cheat sheet for that mash bill. That one's great. Thank you very much. The distillate coming off of the still was like, had these weird, crazy, juicy tropical fruit notes like guava and mango and papaya, and I was like, man, where in the world is that coming from? And the answer is, it comes from a kind of a combination of everything. So the yeast, not the barrel yet, obviously, because it's just the distillate coming off, but the yeast strain that we use ferments very hot on the front in the first 24 hours, so it's almost like a rum kind of yeast where it creates all these crazy fruity esters. But our source of rye grain and the still that we use and our fermentation techniques and our yeast and then the sweet mashing created this really big, bright tropical fruit note that was real sweet. And I was like, wow, that's I'm not really sure what to think of that. I mean, it's pleasant, but I don't know what it's going to be after a few years in a barrel. And then once we hit that 2-year mark with that whiskey and we started tasting it, I was like, oh man, we've got something here. So, you know, our first release, while it, of course you have to put the least, you know, whatever the youngest barrel is in the mix, you have to put that as, so it's aged at least 2 years. But most, you know, most of that whiskey was 2.5 to 3.5 years old. But it's great at that age. And I will tell you that right now at 4.5 to 5.5 years, that same whiskey, I was worried that maybe it would become overly oaky or it would lose some of that bright, sweet fruit. And it has not. It is, if you get out in the market and look for our Sweet Mash Rye at Cask Strength, we have it in batches. And I think we just bottled batch 10. And each one becomes my new favorite.
Your new baby?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. What cooperages do you guys work with for your barrels?
So we started our journey with Independence Dave, and they're great partners of ours. We still get most of our barrels from them. There was another barrel shortage about 1.5 years ago, which happens in this industry quite often when everybody and their brother starts to up their capacities and build new distilleries. And so we made another partnership with West Virginia Great Barrel Company, another tremendous cooperage out of close to White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. So we use both of those barrels, but everything so far that you've tasted has come out of Independence Day barrels. And I know we've got limited time here, but I could do an entire...
Not really, we'll nerd out.
An entire podcast on barrel science, man. The guys at Independence Dave, Andrew Weabrink, the support that they've given us, and the things that we've been able to do together has been just one of my favorite parts of this journey.
That might have to be like part two of this podcast, because we would like to learn more about that.
Jen said she pushed the event to 8 o'clock.
You just emailed everybody in that 30 seconds?
Yeah. She just confirmed it.
But the barrel does have a lot to do with it. So in a nutshell, Andrew and Chad at Independence Dave down in Lebanon, Kentucky, we took all of our mash bills, everything that you see here at the table, new make distillate to them, and they did little bench trials with kind of, they've got these little basically like wooden dowels that they can, it doesn't tell you exactly where everything's going to go, but it gives you a good idea.
Yeah.
And so what we chose was a char one and a complex toast for almost all of our barrels, and then all the staves are 18 to 24 month air dried, which that's where you really dive into the deep science. But letting the staves air dry for that 1.5 to 2 years tremendously changes the chemistry within the wood, and then gives you a much more complex contribution from the wood. So we didn't just kind of like say, hey, let's take this one.
Yeah.
So we have really 4 different custom char toasts.
That's cool.
And for our Sweet Mash Rye, that's a combination of multiple different styles of barrels, same whiskey, but that also adds to the complexity.
That's crazy, man. Was it hard to dial in between the 2 different cooperages as far as the different chars and toasts you were getting because it was 2 different companies, or is that pretty standard for that industry?
It's a great question.
Good job, Mike.
Yeah,
finally.
You did it.
It only took 71 episodes.
I know Jen slipped you that question.
I'm just tasting now our barrels from West Virginia Great Barrel Company are about 1.5 years old.
So that's why you got to like kind of almost like wait for that. So you wouldn't even like really know right away. That's kind of something you got to rest on your laurels.
It's delicious. And I will say that it's not dissimilar. I mean, the whiskey that's going into the barrels helps to guide the flavor. But, you know, what I get to do with my barrel manager, Chris Moore, who's awesome, is... You know, when we're looking at blending, you know, what I'm looking at doing is creating a plan that goes into the future that ensures that each batch matches the flavor consistency, quality, but also, you know, inevitably, if anything, we're going to increase in our quality. But what you can't do is you can't take your best 150 barrels and make 3 batches out of those and then hope the rest of them taste good, right? So the good news is we've not really had any bad batches go through, but you know, we've got barrels that end up in kind of different flavor zones, so we track all those with Excel spreadsheets that I do not create, that Chris creates for me and us, and we're able to put together a consistency of quality scores and flavor profiles, and then kind of like build this model that goes out every year moving forward, 5 years out. So I can tell you, you know, that everything that you're tasting in these bottles, I can assure you that 5 years from now, it's going to be as good or better.
Nice.
Can we talk about the elephant in the room?
What is it?
The bottle.
Oh.
So I think you're the first person on our podcast that have talked about our listeners listening in probably 4 times. So it seems like you're the type of person that has the customer on the top of your mind always. And I feel like, I think I heard you telling a story earlier before we were off mic, when we were off mic, about the bottle itself, and you had a lot of influence in the bottle itself. Yeah. This bottle is beautiful.
Thank you.
This bottle is a masterpiece. It seems like you probably, I want to see the sheet in which you just wrote down all the things that you liked mm-hmm. about bottle design mm-hmm. and took all the things that you liked about each one of those bottles and implemented in this design. This is an amazing bottle. Tell me about it.
Thank you very much. So I would love to tell you that I grabbed a bunch of things I like from other bottles, but it really came from like 3 or 4 really shitty sketches in a notebook.
Really?
Yeah. And
perfect. That's exactly what we want to hear.
And then me taking that to someone who's way more talented than me and saying, can you make something with this mess that I've scribbled on this piece of paper? You know, my partners talked from the very beginning that they, you know, before we even started making whiskey, that they loved bottles with shoulders. Originally, this bottle was not designed to have the shoulder profile that it does, but that came from needing this label space on the front. But the initial conceit for the bottle was I wanted something that was a little bit misshapen, a little bit, you know, organic in the hand. I didn't want everything to be completely neat and clean. So if you feel the actual glass of the bottle, they call it crenellations in the glass bottle world, but you can tell that basically the shape and the misshapen sides are not the same on both sides. Originally, the bottle was going to be a little bit more like spherical or conical or whatever instead of flask-shaped. But again, we needed something to put the label on.
Of course. Yeah, it almost seems like when you first pick it up, like you have these natural sort of like finger spots.
Finger grips.
But then when you actually look at it, it's this more like organic shape on the sides of the bottle that make it kind of, you know, really unique.
You can really tell when the whiskey's out of the bottle. You can kind of see that a little bit better. But so I had this idea, and then we met this incredibly talented artist named Dave Scott. He's out of Belleville, Illinois, down near St. Louis area. And he's a super talented guy, done a lot of work for a lot of other people. But like with most partnerships that work well, we just love Dave. You know, he's a great guy to work with. I enjoy going out and kicking with him, getting dinner and laughing and cutting up, and spent this last weekend with him. But he's got the goods. So he and I spent a good better part of a year and a half, 2 years while this whiskey was aging, trying to figure out this bottle design. And so, you know, it was a funny evolution. I would have an idea that he knew clearly was not going to work. And he'd be like, oh yeah, that sounds great, you know. And then he'd take it back, and he'd give me the next version, and it wouldn't be in there. And I'd be like, Dave, what about that thing that I said? Yeah, but that's why it's great.
I thought you were joking.
So that's why it's great to have somebody like Dave. But a lot of these ideas, I mean, I don't want to take the credit. A lot of these, like the embossing on the back, was all Dave, and it was really fun because Dave did a lot of like historical. He did a lot of historical study on the neck. So if you see this, it's called a bobber, this little kind of bubble that's on the neck. So I've got all these like Lucite models of this that are really cool because you can kind of see the history of the evolution of it. And then we work with an incredible glass partner named Jimmy Owens, he's based in Kentucky, but his company's out of New York, and they're big time. So having the power of that business to say, okay, you know, we've got the design, now we're going to go and find a glass factory and build your molds and push it through the pipe. And then, of course, the cork is the thing that we get the most comment on. So it's actually got a live edge, bark edge on the top. So if you ever see a Hard Truth Sweet Mash cork and you see the kind of rough, gnarled top, that's the actual outside natural bark edge of the cork tree. So,
damn.
Yeah.
That is so sweet. I mean, everything from the bottom to the top. It's a beautiful bottle.
So when we come down to visit you, can we, like, we can spend some time in like the in a rick house or in the still, but like I would love to nerd out with you on the bottle side of it.
Oh yeah, I can show you all kinds of stuff.
I think that's super interesting that like nobody gets to see that nobody like. To be honest, like, does it change the flavor of the whiskey? No, but I think it's super interesting. And it, and you and we've done other distilleries where like they put a lot of time and effort into the bottle shape and the bottle size and the or not the size, but like the cork and everything else. That there's a lot of thought and process going into that. I think it's really really cool.
You know, it was I will say it was the most fun and infuriating and like probably beating in, oh my god,
and probably the most important. I mean, you see this thing sitting on a shelf in a store,
you know it's Hard Truth. Like and, there's no other shape like it,
and even if you don't know anything about the brand, you're like, this is a really cool interesting bottle, I'm gonna buy it just based on that alone.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you buy most of my wine.
That's good,
right?
Yeah,
especially if you, again, back to what we were talking about with all the bottles on the shelf. I mean,
oh yeah,
how are you gonna pick through the morass, right? So thank you for the compliments. It took a lot of work getting there, and then, you know, now we've got our marketing team, you know, in-house marketing team. Now we still work with Dave, but you know they're kind of pushing the concept forward as we move forward. But it took a long time to get there, but I'm real happy with where we ended up.
All right, I want to power through some questions real quick. We just poured out the wheat bourbon.
Ooh, did I get some?
No, you did not. But the bottle's right in front of you. You've been touching it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk about the bourbon, and we're going to talk about the wheat bourbon, because the wheat bourbon just came out. Do you want to give us like a one-minute spiel on the wheat bourbon? Because I think the most important is the actual bourbon, because I think that's what people like, knowing that the actual bourbon's coming from the actual place.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with sourced. We've talked about it 100 times before.
Yeah.
Or 69 times before.
Ooh.
69.5.
Yeah. I think that's my favorite thing is saying, yeah, it's from Indiana. It's our own juice.
Yeah, not MGB.
I love saying that every single time, because everyone's like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, it's not MGP. It's like, nope, it's our own juice, and it is absolutely delicious.
Yeah, before you guys, like, the most popular distiller was from, what was that brewery? What's the brewery in Indiana that, like,
Three Floyds? Loved?
Three Floyds, yeah. They had a distillery. And, like, no one knew anything else, other distillery besides them. So tell us about the wheat.
So, whenever we first started making whiskey, I had three main bourbon mash bills. So our sweet mash bourbon, which is, we've got an internal code, but it's BW1. And then our wheated bourbon, which is BW2, which you will see on the bottle. And then our four grain, which is BW4. And so we started making all these whiskeys at the same time. Again, as far as what we were going to bottle them at and all that, we were just going to, that was TBD. But I had set in my mind that in order to have to tell the authentic story, you know, to come out of the gate and release a bottled in bond was really important to me as a distiller, right? So it was kind of a badge of pride, because you can't do it unless it's your own juice. And, you know, most blends use older whiskey, a couple barrels to boost the flavor profile, and then maybe a couple barrels that are not so good, then you can blend them out and you won't be able to taste them. Bottled in bond is truly the flavor of a distillery. It's, you know, the Bottled in Bond Act that came through said the whiskey that's in the bottle has to be produced under the direction, supervision of one master distiller from one season, and the season is the first 6 months of the year, or the second 6 months of the year, from one distillery, at least 4 years old, bottled at exactly 100 proof, and that's it. So you can't really fiddle around with the flavor profile. You can't add or subtract, or, you know, it is the flavor of that season. So this wheated sweet mash wheated bourbon was distilled spring 2019, bottled spring 2024. So it's right at that 5 year mark.
I think it's tasty as can be, and I like the color of it. Like, I'm looking at the bourbon.
Sorry,
right here.
I got where you're going to dump it on me.
Garrett protects all whiskey.
Oh,
As soon as there was...
Those are dollars.
I saw you pick it up, and I saw it going right on my chest.
And he didn't have his mouth open. I thought you were just going to open your mouth.
Well, you know you wanted that.
I did not want it.
Is this when I take my sweater off?
Yeah.
Maybe we both take our sweaters off.
Everybody will take a sweater off. All right, so I'm going to ask... Question. I was going to talk about the color of it, but you said you wanted to power through questions, so I think that's
go
more
ahead.
Important.
I'm
looking at these two next to each other. We got the sweet mash wheated bourbon, and then the sweet mash bourbon. The colors are slightly different, but you got like this nice ruby color coming from the wheated bourbon, and I think that like almost just like for me, lends to how it feels on my tongue as far as the velvetness of it, and it's just fantastic. It's really, really good.
Velvetiness.
We always make up words.
I think that we could add that to the dictionary.
All right, cool.
There, something surprising about this whiskey for me was the, you know, wheated whiskeys typically are a little more soft, a little more sweet on the whole, you know, for people who are Maker's Mark fans. As we were tasting this whiskey along its journey, you know, as it got to that 3 and 4 year mark, we started noticing that it really has this, it's kind of got the most, for me, the most impressive, robust after finish. So after it's already gone down and you've tasted your multiple notes, that just general warming of the chest, it brings that in, which isn't necessarily all that typical for a wheater. The other thing, which you caught very well, is the mouthfeel. So it's got this creamy, almost like a milk chocolate kind of note, which is very different also for me from a wheaters that I've tasted before.
Why does it, when I type out wheated bourbon on my computer, it gives a red squiggly line underneath it? Why is wheated not a part of the dictionary?
Oh, that's a good question. You're absolutely right. I've noticed that every single time I've typed it too.
I'm super weird and paranoid about like spelling things wrong. So I do all the website stuff, and it's a little squiggly line, and it drives me nuts. Anyway, I got two questions for you.
Okay.
These are ones that I thought really, really long and hard about when I deep dived into you.
Okay.
So, you had a quote said, "I learned how to taste whiskey like a distiller and a blender, not like a whiskey enthusiast." I think that's really interesting because I am a whiskey enthusiast, not a distiller blender. What is the difference in how, not in how you got there, but like, how would you explain that to people? What does that mean?
That's a cool question. So that is something I actually say that a lot because I get in front of bourbon groups a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think what they want to hear from me sometimes is different than what I'm going to give them. So I try to set it up on the front end and say to them, I'm not going to talk to you like a bourbon, you know, enthusiast. I'm not going to talk to you like I didn't get into this industry because I have 300 bottles on my home bar and I was so into it that I just had to get into the industry. I got into it because I love to make things that taste good. I started with food. My dad, you know, and his buddies made wine every year, farmers wine and sausage down in southern Indiana. So I grew up doing that. I love creating flavors. I love making people happy with the flavors that I create. I do love whiskey. I've always loved whiskey, but this was more of an opportunity that presented itself. And so as I went into the project, I wasn't going into it like, okay, I'm going to taste E.H. Taylor and I'm going to taste this and how did they do that. I just wanted to connect with the best farmer I could find who was passionate about growing their grains. I wanted to connect with the cooperage that was going to give me a barrel and talk to me about the barrels in a way that I could help shape flavors. And then I wanted to talk to a yeast partner and a still partner that could give me just the best, right? And then let's just like cooking good food, right? Get great ingredients and then just don't screw it up. So I wanted to get all those things in place and then just feel confident that the whiskey that we were making was going to be our whiskey and it was going to be good. And so the way that I taste whiskey is through that same vein, right? So I'm tasting the corn, I'm tasting the barrel, I'm tasting all those thousands of decisions that we made going into it. So I think the reason why I said that in that moment is because I try to tell that, I try to front load people about that because sometimes they want me, you know, they say, what's your unicorn bottle that you have on your back bar? And I'm like, well, I don't have one of those. I don't, you know.
Good.
So I don't know if I answered your question.
No, I did. No, I was ready to walk through a brick wall with you in that one.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. I think that's really refreshing too, right? Like you're your own distiller. Mm. You're not trying to appease the masses, you're trying to appease yourself and what you think is going to sell really well and what you want to project to the world.
Well, and having that, I mean, I've got to give props to my, you know, first of all, I've used the word I and you've used the word you, but it really is a lot of very talented, hardworking people in that distillery.
Right.
But then also my partners, giving, you know, kind of allowing me to do this. I mean, who gets an opportunity to do that with, I had no business in having that authority.
You're good. Yeah, well, you own it. Just own it.
It worked out okay.
Just own it. Yeah.
They used to squeeze me on the shoulders whenever we'd have, you know, like bankers in, and they're, you know, we had the first 1,000 barrels in the rick house, and they're like, "It's gonna taste good, right, Brian?" Like, squeeze me real hard, and I'm like, "I hope so."
Dude, I just listened to a quote from a GM of football team. Like, why'd you trade up for that quarterback? He's like, "Well, if it didn't work out, I'd be gone, and if it worked out, no one would care." So yeah, like the same thing for you, right? Like, if it worked out, no one cares, and it didn't work out, you wouldn't be here to deal with it.
Right.
It's a good thing everything tastes amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, yeah, no one's going to disagree with that. All right, this is a fun one, right?
Okay.
So don't take offense to this.
No offense.
Promise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, so I looked you up on LinkedIn, and you went to Indiana University.
Yes, sir.
It's great. They also said you spent 9 years there.
I sure did.
Yeah, attaboy. Congratulations.
You had a good time.
5 victory laps.
I'll go one step farther. I've actually been in the city of Bloomington since 1992, my freshman year. I just never left.
Oh, yeah, it's nice. Good. It's like you were enrolled for. Okay, and then you had a degree in recreational therapy. I was wondering how that's going for you in your career right now.
That's what I do, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, I think I started my career at Indiana University and. And it took a long pause in between, and then I went back and decided not to waste my parents' money anymore, and I started spending my own money on it, and I got it done pretty quickly.
Yeah, fair enough.
Dude, awesome, awesome. Brian and Dominic from Hard Truth Distilling, thank you so much for joining us, guys. Really, really appreciate you guys doing
this. Thanks to Jen being here, too.
And Jen, thanks for joining us.
This is very fun.
You guys are so welcome.
How was the whiskey? Did you enjoy
it?
It's
delicious.
Which one is your favorite?
I had a little blend at the end, and it was very good, but I would say the sweet mash bourbon.
So why did you hate the weeded one?
What the hell?
Jesus. Why did you guys bring her along?
Awesome. Well, we gotta flip this room, get you guys ready for another whiskey tasting, which I'm sure you'll only have a couple sips of, right?
Maybe.
Maybe. And I quote earlier, Garrett said he's going to be your poor bitch.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to witness that. It'll be fantastic. But Sipping Social, thanks, you guys. Really appreciate it. And cheers.
If anyone hasn't tried the Sweet Mash Rye, get out of your head and go get it. And then check out the new bourbon. Check out the new wheat bourbon.
Yeah.
They're cheaper than the rye. That's going to be your entry. But check out Hard Truth.
The High Road Rye.
That one is fantastic too.
As well.
These are great plugs, and that's what I was going to ask him if he wanted to plug anything else. And I think that's what's up.
I think the High Road should be the second bottle you buy.
Yeah,
the first three are like entry.
Cool. Yeah, so we've now got our core sweet mash whiskeys out to the world. We do some fun stuff usually towards the end of the year with barrel finishes and one offs to keep things interesting, but. You know, it's fun. We're in 22 states. We're adding, I think, 3 or 4 this year. So I'm all over the United States schlepping this stuff, and it's couldn't be more fun. But this is awesome. I really enjoy this. I'll come back anytime you guys want me.
Dude, awesome.
Yeah,
cheers to you, brother.
See you next week.
Cheers.
Appreciate you. First of all, we'd like to thank our listeners, our families, and friends that support us. We couldn't do this without you. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Tell your friends about us. Big thanks to our producer, Johnny, in the Underground Studio. Also, shout out to Johnny Perona and Davenport Ed. That's the rockin' music you're hearing in the background. Thanks again, and we look forward to the next cocktail with you.
Also, quick thing, Garrett, how do you read your handwriting?
Because I wrote it?
It is atrocious.
It is pretty atrocious.
I'll tell you a fun story. So when I first started serving tables, I had like the guest checkbook.
Yeah.
I was writing down people's orders, and I had like abbreviations for tacos, just a T, and whatever. And my dad found it, and he goes, Garrett, what the fuck is wrong with you? He used to work in restaurants forever ago. Yeah. And I was like, how's anyone going to know what you're trying to order and how they're going to make that food? I go, Dad, all I have to know is what it says. And then I put it in a computer, and it prints out for the kitchen. He goes,
good old Raj.
Okay. All right. Good. He's like used to like putting it on a spindle and like spinning it in the diner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, my handwriting is horrible.